The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special free preview of Season 2 of Blabbing About Batman, the animated series. I am one of your hosts, Crime Alley Landlord Bob Mackey, who is here with me today, as always.
Hey, it's the Dr. Leslie Tompkins of the podcast, Henry Gilbert.
That's right. He's helping us heal, everyone. And in case you weren't aware, last year in 2021, we kicked off Blabbing About Batman, which is our podcast about Batman, the animated series. We did a season of that in 2021, and now we're back in 2022 doing 8 new episodes of Blabbing About Batman, and you're going to hear a little preview of one of the episodes after this intro. But if you want to hear the whole thing, you have to sign up at the $5 level at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
That's right. Every Friday until the end of 2022, you're getting a new episode of Blabbing About Batman, the animated series. And we have so many cool episodes coming your way. Let me name them all for you. We've got It's Never Too Late, The Clock King, Perchance to Dream, Harley and Ivy, Read My Lips, Harlequinade, Over the Edge, and Legends of the Dark Knight. All classics hand chosen by me and Bob.
And if you sign up for $5 a month at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, you can hear them all as they go live throughout the end of 2022. You'll also get to listen to season one of Blabbing About Batman and all of our past miniseries, including Talking Futurama, Talking of the Hill, Talking Mission Hill, and Talking Critic. And that $5 level also gets you access to monthly new episodes of Talking Futurama and Talking the Hill, as well as early access to episodes of Talking Simpsons. It's a good deal, folks, and it's what Batman would want.
Yes, at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. There is a ton of cool stuff there. Also, you know, if you're tempted by this stuff, you should know at the $10 premium level, we have also covered a couple of Batman animated classics as well. Our very first What a Cartoon Movie was Batman Mask of the Phantasm, a huge favorite for me and Bob. Then we also did Batman Beyond Return of the Joker. That was also a ton of fun. And hey, if you also like all this comic book stuff, we've covered stuff like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse there too. Over 4 years of What a Cartoon Movies at that premium level at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
That's it for our little intro. Now please enjoy our little preview of season 2 of Blabbing About Batman, the animated series. So let's get on to this episode. So we've mentioned the writer of this episode, David Wise, in season one. Also, Kevin Altieri. We have not talked about this animation studio on this podcast, and that is Sunrise.
Mm.
And I believe we probably did a bio on Sunrise when we did a Gundam Wing episode of What a Cartoon, or maybe the original Gundam. I forget.
We did both of them. Definitely for Mobile Suit Gundam, I did like the origin of Sunrise kind of thing, but only up to the launch of Gundam, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, yeah. But
I think we briefly talked about them because we covered his Silicon Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunrise, they animated Heart of Steel 1 and 2. I believe it's called Heart of Steel.
Think so, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Whatever. It's the Hardak episode. And Silicon Soul is the follow-up to those. So we mentioned them briefly. But to recap, just to go over this again, we talked about this in the Big O podcast as well. So some people involved in the production of the Sunrise Batman episodes likely went on to create the anime series The Big O. Or maybe just the presence of Batman at their studio inspired people. There's no way to know because all we have is animation services by Sunrise. And that's it. Because the apocryphal story is The Big O made by people who made Batman. Not true, really. It's sort of like, in as of this recording, it's like, oh my god, the Simpsons Death Note parody, the same people who made Death Note made that. Not really. People that did Inbetweening for Death Note and 30,000 other shows did a fine job on that, but it's not like the Death Note people were flown into Burbank and animated that entire parody.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was like a sub-studio of a sub-studio, really, which like...
But
Dr. Movie did a great job. I don't want to say they didn't. Like, they did a great job with, you know, a very difficult thing of... for something that'll be seen in American prime time, like probably with very exacting standards on them, I think they did a great job. But yeah, I know what you mean. Sunrise, technically, you know, they did animate Batman, but their output on a few episodes of Batman is an asterisk in their work everywhere else but America, I'd say.
There's like 7 years between Batman and Big O, or 6 years or something like that. There's a big gulf of time.
Though this does have the feel of a Big O episode of like a weirdo shows up and then disappears just as strangely.
But Batman does not get into a giant robot. Mm-hmm. Sunrise was actually dropped from the series along with Acom because the producers were not happy with their work. I understand Acom. We're actually going to get to an Acom episode next week, and I know why they dropped Acom. They're crazy for dropping Sunrise. This episode looks great, and I love all of their stuff. Mainly, I guess it could be a tiny bit inconsistent, but the highs are very, very high. Higher than anything Acom could put out.
Yeah, I mean, is it as good as TMS or Spectrum? Like, no, not on their best day, but I think it's still one of their better ones. Maybe, you know, I heard them, not about Sunrise on commentaries, but I've definitely heard them say that they think that they... When I say they, Bruce Timm or other producers say they are always wary that they pay Sunrise prices and then they find out Sunrise or some other studio subcontracts to somebody else on top of that. Perhaps they were suspicious of that. I'm not sure. But I mean, definitely when you're Sunrise and you're working on major franchises like Gundam, even in the early 90s, Batman isn't your top priority, you know.
You've got a lot of bigger fish to fry. Mm-hmm. And just some basic Sunrise facts. We covered this in previous podcasts, but founded in 1972 by former members of Osamu Tezuka's Mushi Productions. And Sunrise is actually basically a dozen studios. So it's very, very big. They made things in the 90s like, Gundam has existed since 1970s, but all the Gundam series, 90s hits like Escaflowne, Cowboy Bebop, of course. And then Studio Bones was formed out of some folks who left Sunrise to make their own studio. Now Sunrise, like most things in Japan, owned by Bandai Namco and now called Bandai Namco Filmworks.
Oh, man, that's sad. I didn't know Sunrise was called that now. That's sad. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for Bandai. They're like, we make all the money off these Gundam models. We should just own Gundam and the thing that makes Gundam.
Yes, you make the animated toy commercials. We should own you. I don't understand why we don't.
Oh, Gundam is smarter than a toy. I mean, it is a toy commercial.
Yes,
but,
so was the Big O. That was the original intent. We're going to have a different giant robot in every episode that people can buy. Mm. But the creator said, let's make this more like intellectual and philosophical and heady.
You know, it's like the Transformers movie in that way, too.
Yeah. Absolutely. In no way is it like Transformers movie. I'm still trying to forget. But this episode, I am the one who chose this one. We'll talk about our own intentions throughout the series. I chose this one. It almost made the cut for the first season. It was a very strong contender. And it's actually one of my wife's favorite episodes, Nina Matsumoto. And it's going live on her birthday.
Whoa.
So everyone wish Nina a happy birthday today.
Happy birthday, Nina.
But as I said before in previous episodes, I love Batman stories that just start with a guy. Mm-hmm. And here's another one where just a guy doing stuff for about 6 minutes. And you're like, where does Batman come in? And it turns out to be a great story that Batman is remotely involved in.
Yeah, I really like this one, too. This was always on the cusp of a pick for me, too, so I was glad when you picked it. It was, like, right outside of my pick of four for this eight. And, I remember watching this when it debuted and just, being enthralled by it because it was a character I'd never heard of before. He's not one of the famous, you know, rogue gallery of Batman, and they make the story so compelling. Like, it's hard not to, and especially... You know, both both me and you, I think, really respond to a guy who, like, has his very specific way of doing things and doesn't like when it's upset.
I relate to this attempted murderer. As an anxious nerd who enjoys being on time, I have told friends, I told you to meet me at 3:45.
Yes.
Now you die.
Yes. No, I mean...
Friendships have ended and relationships have ended because people were habitually late, and I don't stand for it, folks.
You can't abide it.
Yes.
No. The thing that really I liked about him, too, was not just like the punctuality, but also that he can't relax. Or also I have a way of thinking, too, of like the one time he relaxes ever is his downfall. And he's probably thinking like, why did I listen to somebody who told me to relax? I should have been constantly vigilant and stuck to my schedule.
And I think it's also about capitalism, not as explicitly as the Riddler episode, but it does show that. You one screw up and you're ruined in society. Like the slate is wiped clean every day. Nothing you did before matters. You need to perform that day to prove that you deserve to be paid, and that's it. So I feel like there's a hint of he's undone by capitalism ultimately. That's my Marxist reading of the Clock King. Thank you.
He lives by the sword and dies by the sword because he is Mr. Efficiency. He builds a system that then destroys him, but he can't blame the system. He blames the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Later in life, I'd learn about the Clock King, and like the comic book Clock King is nothing like this Clock King at all.
And we'll talk about him when this guy becomes the Clock King. I have a little bio, but I'm sure you know more than me, Henry, about this guy.
Well, I also see this as like them picking out like, okay, every episode can't be the famous guys. Let's pick out one of the weirdos. And, he's not as silly as, say, he's close to as silly as the Condiment King, who then would get a cartoon later.
Yeah.
But not as silly. But they found a way to give him, like, a tragic backstory like Mr. Freeze, which is just awesome. I think my only real issue with this episode, I think the plotting could just be a little better. Also, like, Robin should be in this, not Alfred. That's my other problem with this episode. I think he should be... I think they wrote an episode where it should be a sounding board for Batman saying things. It should be Robin replying to him. Batman getting like chauffeured around all day in the daylight by Alfred. That feels a little off to me.
I like Alfred more than Robin, though.
Oh, come on. Robin's cool.
Get him out of the show. He's lucky he doesn't ruin the show.
Man. Well, that's just because you don't think Dick Grayson's sexy.
No. I think Alfred's sexy. No. I'm more of a Poison Ivy kind of guy.
Sure. Well, hey, we'll have that in a couple weeks.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Finally. I remember watching this as a kid. We're about like in week three of the show airing on Fox. And I was like, the Joker and Mr. Freeze, all the people that seem very cool, the powers and, interesting mental illnesses. And here's this guy. As a kid, I was like, who is this guy? He's just a guy and he's got no powers. And I thought that was interesting. I was just like, I was not used to seeing that sort of a crime story in a Batman cartoon like this. That was starting with some of the bigger guns like Catwoman and Poison Ivy and, the rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It showed that they could do. It's an early one where they prove they can do something interesting with a character who wasn't really on like the Adam West show or any of the movies before. Like without the cultural cachet of the Joker or whatever, you can just go into this and like they have to prove to you that the Clock King is a worthy adversary for Batman. A nerd with glasses who's on time all the time. How can this guy do anything to Batman? They convince you of it. They actually make it work.
He's good at planning and also surprisingly good at fighting Batman.
Yeah.
So,
I took that to be, hey, he had 7 years after his brain broke. And if he's that dedicated to punctuality, then he could, I think, when driven, can give that same dedication to probably working out 6 hours a day,
working out his brain, studying all the Batman math. So we open on a filthy Gotham subway station inside of a filthy subway car, and the doors slide open, and this very well-dressed stern man holding a briefcase and a stopwatch boards. And he says, basically, the theme of the episode, it's about time.
On my third rewatch of it, it was like, Oh, that's great. That's the first line. That is perfect. Yeah.
And I remember, this is related, by the way, when the Back to the Future game came out in 2010, the Telltale adventure game, the first episode was called It's About Time. And I was like, wow, that's so clever. And then I saw, oh, a million time travel things are called It's About Time.
Yeah. Well,
so it's not right, really then. That clever.
It's what everybody's first thought is.
Yeah,
I
but
guess.
I that was the first time I saw it in 2010. I'm like, wow, how did they think of this?
Also, you know what? One negative I'll say on this episode too is could have a better title card. It's just like a bunch of clocks.
Yeah,
like,
some of the
boring
title cards aren't great. They are just very basic and you know, bare bones.
You remember all the great ones, but yeah. But also I don't think it's a coincidence that a guy like Temple Fugit is obsessed with trains. Let me just say that too.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, you're totally right about that. And it's funny how, I mean, it's a very intentional, but he's undone by the train, basically, or by Hill on the train, and then Hill's future as a mayor has to do very much with making the trains run on time, which is the thing you say about a guy who people don't like. Well, you know, at least he makes the trains run on time.
Yeah, it's perfect. It is a great, like, children's politics episode. And yeah, I mean, it all is mirrored so well, like, all these things back and forth, like this setup here of Fugit getting on the train. It's also Fugit's mistake, like many an awkward, anxiety-ridden person is, he mistakes, like, he's like, hey, I see you every day. You're my friend. It's like, he doesn't think about you that much, the other guy.
Yeah, Mayor Hill is on the train. He's buried in a newspaper. He gives just basically an unfriendly hello to Mayor Hill. Hill does not remember him, and the man introduces himself. He says his name is Temple Fugit, and he's annoyed Hill doesn't remember him, even though they've been riding the same train, and he points out 4, 1 year, 7 months, and 13 days.
Damn.
Yes.
Man, he's, yeah, and it's, well, this was also when I realized, like, I guess as a kid, I'd never thought about that a mayor or any politician was something before they were a politician. Like, you just know, like, well, yeah, that's the president. He's the president. You don't think about it. But this introduced me to the idea that, like, well, the mayor wasn't always the mayor. He used to be like a lawyer on a train who would later run for mayor and be elected.
Anyone can be a mayor or a judge. You could be like a boat dealership owner and become mayor.
Yeah. I should say, in general, you know, in Batman comics, there's been a lot of mayors, but there's no, like, in Batman comics, there's always Commissioner Gordon. Like, you know, the police commissioner is. And if it's not Gordon, that's part of the story. You're like, well, why isn't it Gordon? But when it comes to the mayor of Gotham is so interchangeable. Like, there's a million, mainly because they get killed a lot. But there's no, like, famous mayor of Gotham, like, named character.
They're definitely there to be hostages and to be slightly threatening to Batman. But Hill remembers Fugit as the efficiency expert because, you know, Fugit mentions how long to the day they've been riding the same train together. And all Fugit has to say is 6 minutes behind schedule. So he's more concerned about the state of the trains. But at this point, Hill tells the Clock King to chill.
You seem pretty tightly wound this morning, Fugit.
I have an important court hearing today. There's been a $20 million judgment against my company. My attorney has appealed. But if we lose, it's the end of everything.
Temple, let me give you some advice. I'm a lawyer. Trust me, I know these things. If that judge sees you looking as tense and haggard as you are now, he'll think you were up to something. Loosen up. Do something to relax before you go into court. Get out of your routine for a few minutes. Do you take a coffee break?
Of course, every day. At 3 on the dot.
Then take it at 3:15.
But my schedule...
Forget your schedule for one day. Believe me, it'll make a new man out of you.
You also can see that Fugit's a freak because he has a laptop back like in the 80s.
Yes, yeah. Whenever this takes place. I mean, we see a copyright 1972 on a watch, but the Batman time period is so fuzzy, but there are computers and laptops and things like that. Even a laptop in 92 was bizarre.
Oh, man, I love the animation on Fugit's reaction when being told, like, take it at a different time. Like, what? What? The way he just says, like, my schedule. So good.
I sort of became more Clock King-like during COVID when I couldn't go anywhere or do anything, where it's like I always eat at the same time every day for no reason. Mm-hmm. I don't have to eat at 7:30, but something in my brain tells me it's 7:30, you must have your dinner now, because it's the way things have gone on for months, and you have to do this or someone will probably die.
Well, I also like that Fugit is a man of the people. Like, he's riding the trains, you know, every same with Mayor Hill, honestly, yeah. The future Mayor Hill. Yeah. And also, yeah, that Fugit, I mean, he's told to take his coffee break at 3:15. And I see later he doesn't even do that. But the flaws in his plan here is that he's like, oh, well, we've had the judgment against us and we have the appeal today. I certainly think that the appeal, they would have lost the appeal anyway, but this gives him a reason to blame somebody other than himself, mm-hmm. which is what makes him a villain instead of a hero.
And then we find out later Hill was his firm was representing the plaintiff in the case.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever the case was is not that important. We don't know what business Fugit was in or what the case was about, but mm-hmm. we just know it's his undoing.
I mean, law firms are big. Everybody, yeah. Like you wouldn't know every case you're. Fellow partners in a law firm are covering, but it gives Fugit just enough of just like, you know, he's honestly, he is a bit conspiracy minded as well, like a crazy person.
I think they do a good job of justifying him changing his schedule because he could easily say, I'll wait until tomorrow. This is very important. But Hill says, if the judge sees you in the state you're in, you're going to be found guilty or you're not going to win this case. Mm-hmm. So you need to relax right now. So that gives him enough inspiration to do it instead of saying, let's just wait until Friday or maybe next week I'll relax.
When Temple views Hill as, you know, a confidant and he actually trusts his expertise because he's like, hey, I'm a lawyer. I know you're going to look really guilty because you're incredibly tightly wound. So you need to relax some. And he has also, just like It's About Time, another great line of like, it'll make a new man out of you, which, yes, is what happens.
It really did. And actually, I'm realizing how much I am like Kala King by going over these notes because he goes over his schedule, including very mundane things like coffee break and check weather. And I use a Hobonichi planner, a very expensive planner, which I love. I've been using them for like 5 years. And I write down unimportant things to do in it because it feels good to check them off. Like, I'll remember to thaw out the salmon, but if I write it down and then check it off, I'll get like a little boost in my brain. That's how I'm wired.
Oh, man. It's you're gamifying it yourself.
Yes, I'm giving myself experience points. I leveled up. And yes, by the way, Temple Fugit is a pun on Tempus Fugit, meaning time flies in Latin.
Clever.
Yeah, very. It's no one's actual name. I'm sure there's maybe three people named Temple in the world, but they figured it out.
Well, and again, that's not the real Clock King, or that's not the original comic book Clock King name. It's way better, honestly. Like, I'm glad they went in this direction with the guy.
And we're going to do bios on the actors behind Hill and the Clock King and bios on those characters. But one thing I wanted to say is they rarely say the Clock King. I think Batman is like some kind of Clock King or something. He's never like, I am the Clock King, Batman.
He's not into the theming. He's a punctual guy who, I mean, I guess he's into theming with his, staff and his glasses. Yeah. I guess he is.
Yeah. I don't know if the glasses are supposed to look like that in the real world or if that's just the way like light is reflecting on them in a clever way, but I don't know if he's wearing the time hands glasses himself. I don't know if he picked those out.
You know, it's not the way his eyes look in his glasses in the first scene, only after, but yeah, it also in Batman animation style, it could read as the lines of his eyes and then like his cheekbones meeting the eyes. So it could work as either. Yeah.
So let's talk about the actor behind the Clock King, Alan Rachins, as the Clock King. And Alan is mostly known for a TV show that was very popular in its time, but mostly forgotten today. And that is L.A. Law. Mm-hmm. And he played Douglas Brackman Jr. So L.A. Law, very, very popular throughout the mid-80s to early 90s. It's still on the air at this time, I believe. And L.A. Law recently resurfaced in social media because there was an episode in 1992 starring Dan Castellaneta as a man inside of a Homer Simpson costume. Mm-hmm. And he's in the costume and he's doing the voice. And the entire L.A. Law episode is about this guy in the mascot costume complaining like, I can't do my job. It's too hot in this. And by the end of the episode, the entire jury is in the Homer costumes.
Right.
Have you seen this clip, Henry?
I've seen the clip. Yeah, it's going all around and it's the first time anybody has thought about L.A. Law on Twitter ever. Like, it's a completely forgotten show. I remember it as like, again, a parents show. Like, it was like a sexy show that had, I remember seeing, the only other time I remember seeing L.A. Law mentioned on anything is it was like on one of those lists of first time a gay thing happened in some context. I think it was one of those, you know, it happened even up to about like 15 years ago where an actress on the show, her character would get a girlfriend for like two episodes and then go back to dating men, but they would mainly just do it to have two girls kiss for an episode to spike the ratings and then instantly stop writing any gay storylines in the show soon afterwards.
NBC won't let us do anymore.
Yeah.
Dan was in that episode and it was about Homer because Fox produced the show for NBC.
Ah, right.
It's one of those things.
It was one of those back in the day before most things on channels are produced by the same production company that owns the channel.
His other most notable role is of Dharma's hippie father on the equally forgotten Dharma and Greg. You go.
That sounds the complete opposite of the Clock King.
Yes. And also, I was looking up Alan Rachins, what else has he done? And he was also the spokesperson for Breath Assure with George Kennedy. Now, Breath Assure was a breath mint product that promised to freshen your breath from inside of your body, but they cannot prove that actually worked. So by the late 90s, the company was defunct.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I did see his like most recent credit is on Young Sheldon. He was or one of his most recent. So he's still active as an actor.
Yeah. Like with a lot of these guys, just a zillion character actor roles and maybe one or two regular roles on a sitcom or drama or something like that.
I mean, years and years on LA Law, I guess it probably doesn't get him a bunch of like syndication money since I don't think it's one of those highly syndicated shows or anything. Yeah.
And also as Mayor Hill, we have Lloyd Bachner. So Lloyd Bachner, he passed away in 2005 at the age of 81. He's a character actor, an incredible amount of acting credits, though his most famous role is of the protagonist of the classic Twilight Zone episode To Serve Man.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
Which is, unfortunately has been overwritten by the Simpsons parody of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the only reason I've watched it, to be like, all right, that was the most recent time I watched it was when we did the first Treehouse. I was like, all right, I should watch this again. It's been a long time. And obviously the only actor by name I remember in that one is Richard Kiel.
Egon himself plays the lead alien.
To us, he's Egon, not Jaws.
Egon is his number one role. And I believe he reprised that role because they did a parody of that episode in The Naked Gun 2.
Oh, wow, man. That's, you know, I watched a million times 1 and 3, but barely any of 2.
And also, Lloyd Bachner played Mayor Hill in 8 additional episodes of this run. 2 episodes of the new Batman Adventures, and he also played Mayor Hill in Batman Vengeance. And like I said, countless roles on TV shows over the course of 4 decades. If you turn on MeTV right now, there is a very good chance you will see Lloyd Bachner. But his most notable recurring roles were in Dynasty, the short-lived early 60s crime series Hong Kong, and The Richard Boone Show.
Okay.
And I wish I knew him more, but I think the name Lloyd Bachner has been thrown out of Mystery Science Theater a lot.
Yeah, it sounds like one of their names. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll hear a riff like Lloyd Bachner is the most dangerous game. You'll think, I should think this is funny, but I'm not. I wasn't born in 1960, so I don't know what it means.
Boy, Dynasty right up there with L.A. Law being like a very important show for its time, but no longevity. They don't. I feel like I guess we'll see how much in another 10 years from now, how much do people talk about like The Sopranos or Mad Men?
Breaking Bad.
Yeah, Breaking Bad. Like, you know, Breaking Bad, I think, has been boosted thanks to its spinoff just ending recently. Mm-hmm. Like, but yeah, there's, well, technically, I guess there was just a Sopranos prequel thing, which was like OVA level fan service of Sopranos fandom. Yeah, it's but LA Law Dynasty, totally forgotten, but he'll live forever as the voice of Mayor Hill.
And a brief note about Mayor Hill in this show, he's a bit of like a stuffy bureaucrat. He's just kind of like a stuffy guy complete with the mid-Atlantic accent. But in the comics, he's actually a villain. We talked about this last episode. He only has political powers, not superpowers. And by the time this started airing, Hill was basically a 10-year-old character. He had existed for 10 years in the comics. So he's a fairly new character for Batman. But yeah, he was like a corrupt mayor in the comics. But here, he's very benign.
Wow. Okay, right. I don't associate Mayor Hill too much in the comics. But yeah, he's... when I think of him, I think of him in the show, which is, I guess that too is... for a kid's show. They break some rules, but I think they don't want kid. The probably some standards and practice rule was like, you can't have kids distrusted authority figure this much. You can't have an evil mayor.
Yeah. And this one, he's actually pretty good because we see he actually gets things done. He does make the trains run on time. He actually supports infrastructure and mass transit.
Yeah. I mean, Mayor Hill actually supports mass transit. He's not like privatizing it to a bunch of companies or like shutting down tunnels into towns or making it so low income people can't live somewhere. Like, yeah, it's kind of impressive in him. That's something else too in this episode that would make it a deeper mystery, but they don't really have time for it. There's nothing about who's running against Mayor Hill. Like,
yeah,
if there was more time for the Clock King episode, Batman would probably first investigate the guy running against Mayor Hill, because this would be, he'd be the first person to benefit from attacks on Mayor Hill.
That is true. I never thought of that, but I guess he's like the incumbent, so it's a sure thing. It doesn't matter at this point. It's in the bag.
Yeah, you know, in Gotham. Well, also, you would think in Gotham you'd get a lot more of these like tough on crime guys. Mm-hmm. In Gotham.
They just let Batman solve everything. It's just like, yeah, no matter how many cops we hire, the Joker's still going to mess things up. So Batman is not on our payroll, and that's good.
I think what you said before, but like the Gotham's like the only city that would justify all of the armored cars and any gigantic police budgets that exist in the real world. Like if Gotham was real, then it would make sense to have that many kind of like armored cops there. But
yeah, every police car would be a tank.
Yes,
if Gotham was real. So we see Fugit's office. He's working intensely on paperwork. We see him abuse a clerk because the clerk brings in a stack of papers. He complains that he wanted those 5 minutes ago, and he tells the clerk, I know how long it takes to photocopy 37 pages, and you took longer than that.
This lets you know he's a jerk. Like,
yeah.
You shouldn't feel too bad for him. He's a manager torturing his employees. You know, he's not a great guy.
And you can see all of his employees are basically trained to work around his schedule because the secretary comes in at 3 on the dot with his coffee for his coffee break. And this is when he hears the words of Mayor Hill echo in his head, you know. Get out of the office. Wait until 3:15.
That was when it felt like, yeah, this is where they feel it's a kid show and they don't trust you that much. Yeah.
But then he tells Miss Perkins, the secretary, put that coffee in a thermos. And she almost goes, what?
I feel like her action is, by the animators, they think that like a slide whistle's coming in the soundtrack, like whoop.
Like, luckily, the musicians or the composer was a little more, had some self-control.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Shirley Walker and her team, they know how to underplay moments like that. Yeah.
And I love how the show takes its time. You're going to hear that a billion times throughout the series. But in here, I love him trying to relax. Like, I guess this is what relaxing is like. And I felt this way, too, where it just, you keep working. And then when it's time to relax, you're like, well, I need like the energy of stress to keep me going. What do I do now? And that's what he's doing here, where he's like, well, what do? I just sit here. I just have my thoughts. What's going on here? But eventually he's able to let his himself relax. His shoulders droop a bit. He breathed a sigh of contentment. So over the course of like 25 seconds, he learns how to relax a little bit.
And that's like instantly it shows that was a mistake to him, at least. This was also the first time I noticed that in the shot of him going to sit down in the park, you see the clock. It actually says 3:05. Like, he didn't even take it at 3:15.
Oh.
The most he could wait was 5 more minutes.
Oh, that's great. I missed that little bit of storytelling. So he couldn't push it to 3:15.
Yeah.
That's great. Five minutes is what destroyed him.
I mean, animators might have just screwed up on it, but I prefer to view it as they drew 3:05 to show, like, he thought he could make it to 3:15, but the only thing he could do is wait till 3:05.
And hey, the mayor told him 3:15, so he can still do that ironic execution on the mayor later, right?
Yeah, he's getting it to him anyway of like, 3:15 was what you told me, so yeah.
But as soon as he's able to find peace, this is when a ball hits him square in the chest. The kids are like tossing a ball back and forth. And what happens to him is what we all fear as adults, children laughing at us.
Oh, terrifying.
Yes.
Man. Yeah. I walk by teens every now and then, and I'm just like, man, if one of these kids just laughed at me or made fun of me, I would just crumple into a ball in this airport right now.
You don't make eye contact. You turn up your podcast.
Yes,
keep walking.
Yeah. If you insult me, I won't even hear it, so I won't start crying.
Teens can't know they have that power against us. So, yes, because of this, the papers he brought to the park, that he planned to, you know, check out on his break. They scatter across the park. He's running across the park trying to grab them. One page falls in the fountain. He climbs up on the fountain. He's reaching over to grab it. That's when this little shit-eating dog sneaks up behind him, barks, and he falls into the water.
You know, he looks a little like Snowy, the Tintin's dog, at least in shape. Not obviously in color. Snowy's white. But...
this is like a Little Rascals gag, though. His undoing.
That's what makes it so funny, too, that like in tragic comic, that the thing that destroys this guy is basically like a Charlie Chaplin short.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Like a Three Stooges gag.
Yeah. So, and then he's doing this. I kept forgetting, like, oh, wait, is this? I kept forgetting that it's the same day. Like he said, today I have this appeal judgment. So that's why this makes him late. He did it on the same day.
Yeah, a lot of it is just like the bad day that undoes a man, these episodes. And let's hear more of his bad day.
Due to his failure to appear, this court finds your client in default. Summary judgment against him stands at $20 million.
No, you can't. I'll be ruined.
Then perhaps this will teach you to be on time for a change.
Lot of ambitious push-ins.
Oh man, straight into his mouth, into the mouth of madness. That is such a great line, because it's one of those things where somebody corrects you on a thing you're never wrong about, or like, no, it's what I live my life by. Like if somebody were to say to us, like, well, maybe you should know a little bit more about The Simpsons then before you say something.
But I know everything.
No, it's not my fault. But yeah, I figure he already lost this case. I don't think they were going to win appeal whether he was there or not. But him showing up lets it be blamed on his lateness, and then he can blame Mayor Hill for that instead of whatever it was his company did wrong that caused them to get... I mean, what did they do wrong? They got a $20 million judgment against them.
In 1992?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, but very ambitious animation-wise, because we push in on the court in animation, and I love the design of the court. It's very impressionistic. There's no people there. They're just like the shapes of a courtroom, and the sound design is just a ticking clock that you heard in the clip. It's so perfect and so impressionistic and very, very noir, and that's why I think that scene rules.
Oh, and the background's all black. Like, it makes it feel like a nightmare, or like... one of those like dream sequences in an old noir film, of just like, you know, just shots of a judge on his bench with just darkness behind him as he points at him, like you're seeing this nightmare that few get lived through, you know.
Yeah, and I think the last episode had us pushing in on a guy's mouth too, and then we cut to a new scene. So they're into that move, and I like, because it's hard to pull off in a TV quality animation of this time period. Mm-hmm. So on the screen we see 7 years later, and then there's a beat, and then we see 8:57 a.m. So even the episode is very time obsessed.
That's very clever. Yeah, and 7 years means that Batman didn't exist. Like he had not. You can assume Batman's only really been in operation for like 5 years or so when the show starts. Like, there was no Batman 7 years ago. So, yeah, it fits. It fits.
Mm-hmm. And we see Mayor Hill in the back of his limo. He's being escorted somewhere by a motorcade. He looks at his stopwatch and closes it with purpose.
Now he's looking at the clock, watching the time.
And now we're at the corner of 2nd Avenue and Wiesnerst, which is named after the background designer Keith Wiesner. And there are lots of signs and names in this episode. There's a lot of like references to people's names in just this episode specifically.
Yeah, they really hit it hard. I got a not Wiesner, but I got the names of all the comic book people to get named here. Yeah.
And now 6 minutes into the Batman show, we get to see Bruce Wayne, much like Mayor Hill in the beginning. His face is buried in some newspapers. Alfred is chauffeuring him around, and Alfred asks Bruce, do you want to stop somewhere for breakfast? Because we all know the meals at these fundraisers are ghastly. And this is when you hear about, in our world, in the real world, you hear about like the rubber chicken dinners at these political fundraisers. It's always the same bad catered food. I usually hate catered food. As someone who had to eat a lot of catered food at events in the press, it's usually pretty bad. It's all just salt. It's just cheap food, dump salt on it. Also, a vegetarian, eat an entire mushroom.
Yeah.
Do you like eating an entire mushroom? You can put it between a bun. You can put it in a burrito. All we have for you is mushrooms.
We covered that in salt, too.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, well, and Bruce, unfortunately, he can't even take advantage of the best thing among these functions, which is open bars. Like, because Bruce Wayne does not drink.
That's what a loser.
Yeah.
Maybe he'd calm down a little bit.
Maybe he'd unwind a little, too. Yeah.
I think him and CM Punk should hang out.
But
knock back a few.
But you know, Bruce Wayne, actually, CM Punk loves Batman. It's one of his
really favorite characters. That makes a lot of sense.
this is a cool thing they've done in a lot of comics and in other things too, where Bruce Wayne isn't just, you know, this gadabout playboy. He goes to these things because it lets him connect with the powerful people in person, like, and get rich guy secrets out of them that Batman wouldn't normally get to hear.
Yeah, even in the car, he's kind of like an ass kisser to Mayor Hill. He's kind of defending him, saying, you know, I don't think Mayor Hill would want to poison his supporters, Alfred.
Yeah, see, Batman, you should be, you know, Batman should be independent and objective. He should be doing his Batman thing no matter who the mayor is.
I agree, but something is amiss in Gotham.
Really? If he were in a hurry to get to the food, he'd be ahead of us instead of behind us. I take it taxi drivers are no longer required to obey traffic signals.
Climb off it, geezer. You had the red.
It's nobody's fault. Look. The traffic signals are malfunctioning.
Bruce is a good mediator.
Yeah, he's doing his best. This is a great first step in his revenge plan. That he's like, yeah, I'm going to make everybody late. How do you like it now, Hill? Like, that's where he starts.
It took 7 years, but now everyone is late.
And you know what? If I was going against Hill, I wouldn't get him on, like, things not running on time anymore or whatever. I would use the fact that, like, he's weak on crime. His own district attorney became Two-Face.
That's true.
This guy's bad.
But if you are a criminal, you want him to be weak on crime, right? Yes, you don't want to point that out. Like, he should be locking me up.
That's true, yeah. No, if I was running against him, I would say, guys, you can't trust this guy on crime. His Two-Face is his old DA. Look at all these photos of him with them together.
We need to start investigating Mayor Hill.
Yeah.
But we see the Clock King. He's now in his Clock King costume, which is kind of the same as his old costume, really, except he's got a cool, like, clock hand sword that I think is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a sword cane that's always a sword.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
And it's sharp enough to slice Batman's costume.
Yeah.
He pulls out this sinister remote control. And back on the street, we see this New York cabbie that we heard Jeff Bennett earlier talking about. Mayor over the hill. Nothing works right in the city anymore.
I love that. Like, a taxi driver pointing at the mayor and going like, you suck, mayor. Like, that's great. Yeah.
And Alfred comments, you know, this won't bode well for his reelection. And Bruce figures out, no. And that may be exactly the point, Alfred. So somebody is trying to make Mayor Hill look bad. Bruce has already figured it out.
Yes. He is the world's greatest detective.
Mm-hmm. And Bruce looks upwards at the figure at the top of the building. It's the Clock King. And this is when the Clock King extends an antenna on the remote, presses the switch. Explosions ring out, but they're not to destroy anything. They're to unveil this graffito-tagged banner of Mayor Hill with the text, "Time for a change." So... he's trying to take down Mayor Hill through, advertisement, basically.
Yeah, but again, you can make him look bad, but who's his opponent in this, you know, is the incumbent? He should be lifting up the other guy.
I agree.
Yeah.
Mayor Hill is pissed, needless to say, and I love this scene of Batman transforming because Bruce Wayne, he goes into the famous Wiesner building, and we see the silhouette of Bruce Wayne, like, running up the stairs to the windows, and then gradually he transforms into the Batman costume as he's running up the stairs.
That's so great. Like, it really feels like the kind of storytelling you'd see in I want to say Will Eisner's The Spirit, this kind of, which mm-hmm. definitely was an inspiration to Bruce Timm and his team, but just the way of, like, just telling a story through a series of silhouettes, like, that's so great.
It doesn't really make sense, but it's cool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you change into the Batman costume while you're running up flights of stairs.
As fast as you can, not slowing down at all. But again, he's Batman. He can just do it. Yeah.
And this is when Batman meets the Clock King.
Well, the Batman.
It's about time you showed up. I suppose you want to know why I've brought downtown Gotham to a standstill, Batman. Well, let's just say it's because I'm a civic-minded citizen with a lot of time on his hands.
I want some answers, wise guy. Talk!
A pity. I don't know what to tell you, Batman. Except perhaps that the 9:15 is always 6 minutes early.
Yeah, I just love his bravado. This dork, mouthing off to Batman. And like, when he's able to escape through such a cool, like, just, and his escape route is, I know when trains arrive.
Yeah.
That the look on Batman's face is dumbfounded. He's like, what the fuck just happened here?
And I think he knew, well, I've been studying Batman, we find out later. I know when he'll be up to the top of this building, and that soon after the train will arrive. So I stall with a cool speech until then I tumble backwards off the building. I love the shot of him tumbling backwards, and then you see him standing on the train as it goes into the distance.
And his spinning watch just flung at Batman and then just explodes at Batman. Like, what the hell? Like, yeah, Batman doesn't know what to think of this guy.
That's another power we didn't mention. He has he's got the sword cane. He's pretty acrobatic, and he also has these stopwatch like bolo explosives that can wrap around your legs or just explode things when you throw them at people.
Cool. Yeah, they're pretty cool. It seems like he learned a lot about bombs in those 7 years. Mm-hmm. But I guess, you know, it's time bombs. It connects. I could see him learning a lot.